Hey guys, and welcome to another episode of Ireland Crimes and Mysteries. I want to thank you for joining me today, and if you're a returning listener, I want to say a big thank you for your continued support. If this is your first time listening to my podcast, welcome. It's great to have you on board. So without further ado, let's get started on today's story.
Ireland Crimes and Mysteries is presented by Go Loud, Ireland's leading audio publisher and the home of Irish podcasts. Find new episodes on the podcast first on the Go Loud app and on your favourite podcast platform.
Hey everyone, and welcome to today's mini episode of Ireland Crimes and Mysteries. In a small little graveyard in County Clare, there's a body buried that could arguably be one of Ireland's most famous murder victims. Her name is Ellie Hanley, or Ellen Hanley. Now, you may not recognise that name at first. When I tell you the story behind her, or if I mention the name Colleen Bawn, it might sound a bit familiar. Colleen Bawn, of course, translates from Irish to English as literally the white girl. Now, the tragic death of Ellen Hanley, or Ellie, has probably gone down in Irish folklore, legend and history. Her story has travelled across the Atlantic Ocean to America and beyond. So let me tell you about Colleen Bawn. Ellen Hanley was a 15-year-old Irish peasant girl, but she was very, very pretty. She had no education and no social graces. She lived with her uncle in a small cottage near Ballycahan in North Limerick, after having been abandoned at an early age by her father, who remarried after the death of her mother. So she went to live with her maternal uncle, and he raised her as basically his own. From the get-go, he started putting money aside for a dowry for her. By the time she was 15, he had amassed what would have been a fortune basically back then of £100. That summer in 1819, Ellie gained the attention of a man named John Scanlan, who was the heir to Ballycahan Castle. He was good looking and only in his early 20s, which probably by today's standards would be considered quite an age gap, considering she was only 15. He was from an aristocratic family, but had developed a bad name for himself locally. Having been dishonourably discharged from the Royal Marines, John was more often than not seen up to no good, basically, or out hunting with a friend called Stephen Sullivan. It was around this time that he caught the attention of Ellie, and she basically fell head over heels for him, and they began a courtship. Within a few weeks of meeting, at the beginning of July, the two of them eloped, taking the £100 dowry with them. John and Ellie headed to a village called Glynn, which lies on the banks of the River Shannon. She now had her own servant, a girl called Ellen Walsh. And she told anyone that would listen that she was now married to John and showed off all her newly found wealth. John had also not told any of his family. He had not told his sister that he had got married. And it turned out, as a matter of fact, that the wedding was actually not a real wedding at all. It had been performed by a fake clergyman. It didn't take long for John Scanlan to become practically, you could say, bored with Ellie. And before long, he was mistreating her, basically. Her servant Ellen noticed over time how her demeanour had changed, how she was beginning to look drawn and unkempt. And before long, Ellen just disappeared. John didn't seem concerned at all by the fact that his wife, in inverted commas, had gone missing, and basically told people that she had gone off with a sea captain. He seemed to revert back to his old ways with his friend Stephen Sullivan. And basically, despite the fact that Ellie's friends were asking where she was, he just continued on with his old life. Her maid, Ellen Walsh, then noticed that the two men were wearing rings on their little fingers that were very familiar to her. They looked like rings that Ellie had been wearing prior to her disappearance. She then noticed John's sister wearing a woolen cloak which had once belonged to Ellie. All this was making her very suspicious as to what had actually happened to Ellie, and she began to feel that something terrible had happened. But without a body or a crime scene, even back then, There was nothing that the police could do. It wouldn't be until September of that year that what had actually happened to Ellie would come to light, when two fishermen made a really gruesome discovery along the Shannon estuary. Washed up on the strand was a really badly decomposed body of a young girl, and it had a rope loosely tied around her body. One of the arms was completely missing and the other was broken. The fishermen assumed it was just some poor soul that had accidentally drowned, but they all the same rushed to tell the police in Kilrush, County Clare. Before long, Major Warburton of the Irish Constabulary got wind of word of the body that had washed up on the strand of a young girl, and he was very much aware that Ellie was missing. So he informed the magistrate at Glynn, and he dispatched a representative to examine and hopefully identify the body as that of Ellie Hanley. He was accompanied by Ellen Walsh and another man named Jack King, who was a rope maker, and he had actually lent John Scanlon a rope some months previously, and it hadn't been returned to him. The witnesses examined the remains, and immediately Jack King recognised the rope and confirmed it was identical to the one borrowed by John Scanlon. Ellen Walsh at first couldn't decide whether the badly decomposed body was that of Ellie Hanley, but she did think that she recognised the torn pieces of fabric that were still attached to the body. But unfortunately, her face was so decomposed that it was impossible to give clarity in identifying her. The magistrate asked Ellen had Ellie any identifying features, and she did say that she had some teeth that overlapped, and they thought that this might be a way to formally identify her. But when they opened her mouth, they discovered that all her teeth were gone, which indicated to them some sort of violent assault. A doctor would later confirm that the sockets of the teeth in her jawbone matched what Ellen Walsh had described. It was then that Ellie said that this must be Ellen. Warrants were immediately issued for the arrest of John Scanlon and Stephen Sullivan, but little effort was made by the police in Limerick to apprehend the men. Because of his aristocratic background and the fact that he came from a rich family, the police were basically, they didn't want to upset the family. In early November, Thomas Spring Rice, who was the local magistrate, finally, after losing his patience, organised his own raid on Ballycahan Castle. They searched for several hours without finding either suspect. They were just about to give up when they found John Scanlon a hide in a haystack. He was taken to Limerick jail while the hunt continued for Stephen. John kept up his story that Ellie had run away with a sea captain, but the authorities did not believe that story. John was sent forward for trial in March 1820, and because of his family's wealth, they hired Daniel O'Connell, who at the time was the most successful Irish barrister, to defend him. And yes, that is Daniel O'Connell, famous Daniel O'Connell, who was about to start a political career which would make him a national hero, really. He would lead the struggle for Catholic emancipation, almost gaining independence for Ireland. Daniel O'Connell would put all the blame of Ellie's death on Stephen Sullivan, which was a hard one to argue because basically there was no evidence of how she actually had died. But the fact that Stephen and John were so close kind of went against them. It was felt that it would be highly unlikely that Stephen Sullivan would murder Ellie without John having any knowledge or any participation. And before long, the jury found John Scanlon guilty of murder and he was condemned to death. John would continue to protest his innocence, strongly denying any involvement in Ellie's death, backing up O'Connell's argument that it was Stephen Sullivan and that Stephen had murdered her without him knowing anything about it. To a lot of people, he seemed very sincere, and this kind of brought an unease about his guilt. His mother also made frantic efforts to gain a last-minute reprieve for him before he went to the gallows on the 16th of March 1820. Now, the execution itself turned out to be even more dramatic than the trial had been. As John Scanlon got closer to the gallows, the horses pulling his wagon just froze and wouldn't budge another inch. It was like they just stopped in their tracks. Some folks in the crowd started shouting that this was a sign that he must be innocent. Maybe his mother had even paid off the driver to help delay things. John stood up and proceeded to walk to the gallows. The hood was placed over his head. The executioner was about to signal for the hanging to begin when the Sheriff of Limerick intervened. He pulled the hood off John Scanlon and asked him if he wished to confess to the murder of Ellie Hanley before dying. John just said that he never expected to see the light of day again and continued to protest his innocence. And after that, the execution continued and John was hanged. But a lot of people still believed he was innocent. Meanwhile, Stephen had fled to County Kerry, changed his name to Clinton and married a local woman. But after a while, he began running low in funds and he started to commit petty fraud and eventually got arrested. It would be a fellow prisoner that would inform on him for the reward on his head. And after that, he was returned to Limerick to answer for his part in the murder of Ellie. His trial was a lot more low-key than John's had been. He basically couldn't afford the likes of Daniel O'Connell and eventually would also be sentenced to death. He dictated his confession. He would blame John Scanlon as being the instigator and the main driving force behind the murder, but admitted that he was the one that actually killed her and disposed of her body. He said John Scanlon had tied her up not too long after taking her dowry. She'd become a nuisance and he kept telling Stephen that he needed to get rid of her. Stephen said he kind of was apprehensive at first, but eventually would give in to John's persistence. They got a boat and their plan was to get Ellie as drunk as they could so that she would pass out. And after that, they would row the boat out into the middle of the estuary of the River Shannon. They would shoot her, tie up her body with chains, hoping that that would cause her to sink to the bottom of the estuary. Their first attempt failed because Stephen couldn't bring himself to pull the trigger. He said John was furious when he saw Ellie still on the boat. He said John pestered him until he agreed to go back out and try a second time. On the second attempt, Stephen fired the gun, but he messed up the shot completely and hit her arm instead of the head. Obviously, this woke Ellen from her drunken state and she started to scream. It was then that Stephen started beating her until she was dead with the butt of his gun. This was the reason why Ellie had lost all her teeth. He explained it hadn't been easy to try and kill her in the boat as the boat kept rocking back and forth. And in the middle of it all, the iron chain that he had taken out with him to help sink her body fell out of the boat with all the rocking. It was then that Stephen improvised and used the rope to attach weights to her body before throwing her overboard. When he got back to shore and told John, his only reply was, "All right." It seemed to all intents and purposes that the whole reason for Ellen's murder was for John to get his hands on her dowry. He had planned the whole thing. He assumed because she was a peasant girl that nobody would care, especially his peers. Ellie's death warrant was basically signed as soon as John got his hands on her dowry. The Limerick aristocrat had murdered the naive, young, teenage peasant girl and basically tried to pin it on Stephen. Beneath John Scanlon's charming appearance and his constant claims of innocence, there lurked the nature of somebody truly ruthless. And from that story, Ellen Hanley or Colleen Bawn or White Girl or Fair Lady became immortalised in many plays and writings over the years, which cemented her place as one of Ireland's most famous murder victims.
So guys, that's it for today's episode of the Ireland Crimes and Mysteries podcast. Again, thanks for your listenership. And don't forget to subscribe to the show and hit that auto download so you never miss an episode. Until the next time, keep your eyes open and your mind curious. This podcast has been compiled from information gathered in the public sphere, like news articles, documentaries, and open source material that can be found on the web. Everything in this podcast is alleged unless a conviction has taken place.